McShane Bible Study Day 257 and 258, and we are starting in 2 Samuel chapters 10 and 11. And I don't have a lot to say. That's loud. So in chapter 10, he's trying to honor the son of the Ammonite king who had been, good to him. And his men, his advisors say that David's trying to spy on him. And so they humiliate David's men, and which causes David to come and go to war with them. And they hire all kinds of Syrians, so they have a big army, but they defeat them and they drive them back to the city. And Amman, Jordan. Amman is the capital of Jordan. And I assume this is the same Amman. And then that brings us to the story of David and Bathsheba, pretty famous story.
And the reason I asked if that was her actual name was because it seems like a coincidence that he'd see her in a bath.
Right. And she's taking a bath on the roof. He's watching her. And then he, this is one of his low moments in life, right? He makes one bad choice after another, and they're not just bad choices most people would make, they're extremely bad choices. And so he takes her. She didn't have a whole lot of say in this, right? He's the king. And then she's pregnant, and so she tells him. So then he's trying to cover up what he did. Uriah, you have to understand, was one of David's mighty men. He had been with him in the beginning when very few were with him. Mm. Right? So, mm-hmm. Not that this would be okay if it was a stranger. Mm-hmm. But it's worse if he's one of your close, men that stood with you when the whole world was against you. Mm-hmm. And so he tries to get Uriah to go home so that Uriah will think that this baby is his. But Uriah is, his understanding of loyalty is that he should not go home and have the comforts of home while the rest of his men are out at war. And so he doesn't do it. David gets him drunk, hopes that'll make him go home. He doesn't do it. So David sends a message to the front to Joab to have Uriah killed. He gets killed. Bathsheba mourns. And then David marries her after the time of mourning is over. And she's going to be Solomon's wife, right? Although there's going to be a tragedy before that because the Lord...
Solomon's mom.
We're going to see a tragedy because of this because the Lord is not happy that David has done this. Mm-hmm. He's used... Jesus that says, I can't picture where this says, it's certainly biblical, to one who much is given, it's Jesus in a parable, right? To one who much is given, much is expected, mm-hmm. right? David's been given the kingdom. Mm-hmm. Like if he wants wives, there's a whole lot of women he can get wives from. Mm-hmm. But he decides to take another man's wife, mm-hmm. right? And so the Lord is very upset. What he's done is very wrong. And so we'll see that play out in the coming days. Okay, next we are doing 2 Corinthians chapters 3 and 4. And this is 3, 4, 5. This is just an incredible part of the Bible. He's talking about the gospel. So... what he's saying is, look, the law of Moses came with a glory. Moses would go up the mountaintop, and when he would come down to the people, his face would be shining. Mm-hmm. And it would scare the people, like, what is going on with Moses? They knew he'd been with God, and he's shining, but it kind of scared them, right? Mm-hmm. So he would cover his face so they wouldn't see the shining light coming out of his face. Mm-hmm. Okay? He says, so there's a certain glory of that, right? That's an obvious glory. Mm-hmm. He says, but that was just the receiving of the law that leads to death.
Mm-hmm.
The written law, the religion, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was pointing to life, but no one could take it and use it to receive life.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so Jesus fulfilled that law and made it possible for us to come into a greater glory. And that's what he's saying in chapter 3, that we get to enter into a glory that's far greater than the glory of Moses. Obviously, the glory of Moses was pretty glorious as if his face shone like gold, right?
Mm-hmm.
And that's pretty incredible. I'd like to mm-hmm. see that, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well, it'd probably freak me out too if I saw that.
Mm-hmm.
Right? I mean, that's... But he's saying the glory that we have been invited into, that we can mm-hmm. live in, is a greater glory. Let's see what I highlighted, verse 10. Indeed, in this case, what once had glory has come to have no glory at all because of the glory that surpasses it. He said, even though that law of Moses was glorious because it was given by God, it's not some mm-hmm. other religion that wasn't mm-hmm. given by God. This was a religion that was given by God.
Mm-hmm.
That makes it pretty amazing, right? The God who created everything gave this religion. It had a glory. But he says, 11, for if what was being brought to an end came with glory, much more will what is permanent have glory.
Mm-hmm.
So he's saying, we're entering into a permanent reality.
Mm-hmm.
We're in this, the next chapter he's going to talk about, we're in this, you know, funny middle place where we're trying to come out of the old and into the new. But we're entering into a permanent, eternal glory, mm-hmm. right? 12 says, since we have such a hope, we are very bold. Says, we're not like Moses who's going to hide the glory. We're going to, speak strong and proud to wherever and whenever it comes up. That doesn't mean we need to go stand on the street corner shouting, Jesus is Lord, are you saved? I mean, mm-hmm. if the Lord leads you to do that, fine. But I would argue it's certainly not what he's calling us to do. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
16. Let me finish that point. But it is saying, as the Lord brings up a situation to talk to a friend or someone we meet, that we are bold that we have eternal life.
Mm-hmm.
We have eternal truth. We have the glory of God in us.
Mm-hmm.
And we should let people know that, look, this is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Jesus is the way, the life. There's no other way.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Verse 16 says, but when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. So he was saying, there's a veil. People can hear the message, but there's a veil covering them, so they can't see it. Sounds like foolishness to them,
mm-hmm.
right? It used to me.
Mm-hmm.
Sounded like foolishness to me. How can one religion be right when most of the world doesn't even know this God? That can't be right. I used to think things like that.
Mm-hmm.
There was a veil covering, even though I'd gone to church all the time growing up. I'd been exposed to this, but my heart didn't want to receive it,
mm-hmm.
right? And so the veil got lifted. Oh, this really is the truth.
Mm-hmm.
Only then could the Lord fill me and begin to teach me and begin to transform me.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so I'm a completely different person than I was then.
Mm-hmm.
If you saw me then and saw me now, you wouldn't, like, it's hard to imagine I'm the same person. Because the Lord has been transforming me for these last couple decades.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So he says, when one turns to the Lord, the veil is removed. Now the Lord is the Spirit, and where the Spirit of the Lord is, there is freedom. So there's a new freedom in Christ, not beholden to the rules of this world. 18, and we all, with unveiled face, beholding the glory of the Lord, are being transformed into the same image from one degree of glory to another. For this comes from the Lord who is the Spirit. So that's what I was just talking about, right? Mm-hmm. He says that's what's, you know, I didn't know that was going to happen.
What?
When I came to the Lord, I didn't have discipleship in my life. So the Lord had to mm-hmm. use circumstances in my life and people and various teachers and situations to teach me early on before I had mm-hmm. discipleship in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but Paul understands this is the way it has to be, right? This is, mm-hmm. this is, if this isn't happening, then you're not really walking in the Spirit.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know that. So my life mm-hmm. did start changing slowly at first.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't, no one told me. I just thought I was believing in a new religion. Like, not a new religion, but new to me. I'm like, okay, well, this is the truth. Well, if it's that's my heart. I want to be about what's true.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard for me at first because, well, if this is true, then all my other idols that I built up in my heart and my mind, that means they're not true. That means I'm creating a truth that's not true. That was kind of how I kind of came to the Lord is, well, wait a minute. These new things I'm learning, then this, you know, what I believed
mm-hmm.
makes less sense than that this is the truth. Well, if this is the truth, then I want to know it. And so I believed.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? But no one, I didn't know I was going to change. I didn't have any of this theology, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know how it was all supposed to work. I just said, if this is the truth, then I don't want to ignore the truth.
Yeah.
Right? And he says, so we will be transformed from one degree of glory to another. This comes from the Lord who is Spirit. He fills us. He takes hold of us and changes us day by mm-hmm. day. So the difference is the changes day by day are really small.
Mm-hmm.
But over, as years pass, you see, wow, I'm transforming rapidly. Right? Mm-hmm. As decades pass, it's just the changes... you know, I remember I had a friend, and this is many years ago, but a friend assumed something online because he knew me before. I think I used to say foolish things online. If who knows what I was talking about, probably something political or something, I don't know. And he had a problem with that, and he tried to throw back in my face something from the past. And I'm like, dude, that's not me. You haven't known me in years. That's not me, you know. But he, in his mind, because generally in the world, people don't change as much. Certainly not the way the Lord changes a person.
Mm-hmm.
So anyways, Paul's saying this is a part of the life of God, that we be transformed from our old life, mm-hmm. which we willingly die to, into something new. And so then chapter 4, he starts talking about the light of the gospel. I highlighted starting in verse 3. And even if our gospel is veiled, it is veiled to those who are perishing. So he says, what we teach, if someone has the veil and they can't hear it, they can't mm-hmm. believe it, then there's a veil. Like I just mm-hmm. talked about a veil. Paul had a veil early on, right? Paul's teaching this now, but he had a veil. Remember, he was going around trying to throw all the Christians in jail, mm-hmm. killing if necessary,
mm-hmm.
right? He says, well, yeah, it's a veil to those perishing. That doesn't mean that everyone is perishing if they haven't accepted Christ, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it doesn't mean they always have the veil. I had a veil for a large part of my life, and then I didn't have the veil.
Mm-hmm.
And the question can be, in what ways is the veil still the world?
Mm-hmm.
Religion, perhaps, or philosophies mm-hmm. of the world, or tendencies of the flesh, in what way is there still a veil keeping me from the fullness of the life of Christ, the kingdom, right?
Mm-hmm.
But he's saying, just in general, the salvation message, he's saying there's a veil still for those who are perishing. Again, that can be lifted at any time,
mm-hmm.
right? In their case, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers. Satan is the ruler of this world. Very few people go around saying, I worship Satan. But mm-hmm. everyone who doesn't worship the Lord is worshiping Satan. Even if we say we worship the Lord, but we go in the ways of the world, we're worshiping Satan.
Mm-hmm.
Right? No one thinks like that, but that's just the reality of it. So he says, the God of this world has blinded the minds of the unbelievers to keep them from seeing the light of the gospel, the glory of Christ, who is the image of God. Satan does not want us to know the truth of Christ so that mm-hmm. we enter into God's grace, right? 5, for what we proclaim is not ourselves. This is very different. Most people in the world grow up proclaiming how great they are and you should follow them.
Mm-hmm.
Paul says, we're not doing that. It's not about us. But Jesus Christ as Lord, with ourselves as your servants for Jesus' sake. Mm-hmm. We are proclaiming Christ and his kingdom. We are simply mm-hmm. servants of that. Mm-hmm. You see the difference? For God, who said, let light shine out of darkness, has shone in our hearts to give the light of the knowledge of the glory of God in the face of Jesus Christ. As darkness increases in the world, this light of Christ in us will be more and more apparent. 7, but we have this treasure in jars of clay to show that the surpassing power belongs to God and not to us. So he goes on for quite a while about this topic, but he's basically saying, you understand what he's saying there? We're a jar of clay. We're nothing. Mm-hmm. A jar of clay is nothing special. Mm-hmm. Right? He says, that's what we are. Mm-hmm. We're just, we still are in this body. Mm-hmm. We don't have the renewed body yet. Right? Mm-hmm. That will come later. We don't have that yet. Mm-hmm. So we're still in a jar of clay, just like every other person walking around. Mm-hmm. But we're filled with the Spirit of God. Mm-hmm. You see that? Mm-hmm. So there's eternity working in us, transforming us inwardly, while outwardly our body gets older and is dying. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. 16, so we do not lose heart, though for our outer self is wasting away, our inner self is being renewed day by day. So that was just saying, right? For this light momentary affliction, so whatever difficulties we have in the world, they're really nothing compared with the glory, right? Mm-hmm. Is preparing for us an eternal weight of glory beyond all comparison. The goodness of God for us blows away mm-hmm. any difficulties that we have, mm-hmm. right? As we look not to the things that are seen, but to the things that are unseen. So we train ourselves to look, what is God doing? What are the spiritual realities of this situation? Not what I see with my eyes and hear with my ears, or mm-hmm. maybe sense, you know, my feelings or whatever. What's God doing? Mm-hmm. Train ourselves. We as long as we continue to give ourselves to this, God will train us to see what he's doing in the situation, mm-hmm. which is far and above what we can see with our senses, our natural senses. Mm-hmm. For the things that are seen are transient. You know what that means?
Nope.
The things that are seen are wasting away. They'll be gone. They'll be nothing. They'll be dead. Mm-hmm. But the things that are unseen are eternal. Mm-hmm. So we train our minds, our spiritual eyes, our spiritual ears, to see and understand spiritual truths, which are eternal. That we get filled more and more by these things rather than by the things of the world and the flesh. Mm-hmm. Does that make more sense? Mm-hmm. Okay. And we move to Ezekiel 17 and 18. And Ezekiel 17, God tells Ezekiel to give a riddle to the people about an eagle and a twig and a vine and a mountain. And he's basically, long story short, he's telling all of Jerusalem, the king there, and all the people that, look, you have turned away from me. Mm-hmm. You have not honored me. You're looking to things in this world, to Egypt, to protect you instead of simply trusting in me. And so mm-hmm. I will bring you down, but I will bring up those who do trust in me. What's interesting, I found out, and I don't think he's necessarily referring to this because it seems like he's referring to the remnant, but he says, 23, on the mountain height of Israel will I plant it, that it may bear branches and produce fruit and become a noble cedar, and under it will dwell every kind of bird. In the shade of its branches, birds of every sort will nest. That's the dream of Nebuchadnezzar in the book of Daniel, right? Not, except for the mountain part, but I just found that interesting. It was maybe a common idea at the time, or for whatever reason, it's just very similar. And then in chapter 18, they talk about a parable. That was your question. So there was a parable. The fathers have eaten sour grapes, and the children's teeth are set on edge. And so what it means is, because the father had sinned, the effects the what are those called? The outcome. It's a C word. I tell you guys about consequences. Yes. The consequences are on the kids, right? Mm-hmm. And so that's what that parable means. And that parable probably came from the fact that in the book of Moses, it is a spiritual truth. It's a truth that the world is made up of, that we inherit familiar spirits and ways in the flesh that are from our parents that are not of the Lord. And then we have to deal with them and overcome them, right? So it's a true principle, because God says in the law of Moses that I will, and I give the bad side. The good side is that if we're raised in ways that are right and good, we keep those habits and those things flourish in us. And we flourish because of those things throughout our life and pass those on to our kids. So that's part of the law of Moses that, it's a bad quote, but I will restore blessing to the fourth generation and curses to the fourth generation, something like that. Mm-hmm. Well, it's a spiritual reality, like it or not. It's like it's got, mankind through Adam turned the keys over to Satan, and we either follow the way of the Lord or we follow the way of Satan. And we either curse multiplies or blessings multiply. And sometimes we have both, because we're in a tangled up reality where we're in a life mixed with the life of Christ and the way of the world, mm-hmm. right? So we can experience both of these things simultaneously. But the people had made it a religion, right? Instead of a law-giving understanding of truth, they had made it a way to treat kids badly, or people badly. Could be an adult who had a father who had sinned and gone wrong, and so they were treated badly because of their family. Even if the younger generation was a good man who honored the Lord in every way and overcame the way he was brought up, they were still treated badly. And God says, I'm fed up with this. So this is really the first time that he's introducing the idea that, look, I look at each person individually. Each one of you can choose my way or not. And I will bless those who choose my way. And those who don't will still continue to live in the curse and receive the consequences of that. Mm-hmm. He says, and if someone is living according to the curse, but they turn around, they repent, they choose my way, I will bless them. Mm-hmm. You see that? That's what he's saying here in chapter 18. And I highlighted some stuff, but I think we covered it. And then we're in John 18 and 19. And so we see, they're in the garden. Jesus is betrayed, arrested. They come before Caiaphas and Ananias, and he's prosecuted. And then they bring him to Pilate. And so Pilate's questioning him. And so he's acting very differently than anyone. Pilate, and he says this later, like, don't you realize I have the ability, I have life and death, I can choose your fate? And so normally people are begging to him for life, right? Mm-hmm. But Jesus knows he's under a higher authority. Mm-hmm. So the things we were just talking about in 2 Corinthians, like, Jesus is living that. It's not just a theory to him, it's his life. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right? Starting in verse 36, it says, my kingdom is not of this world. If my kingdom were of this world, my servants would have been fighting that I might not be delivered over to the Jews. But my kingdom is not from the world. So he knows, we talked about the seen versus the unseen. Mm-hmm. Jesus fully understands this, right? He's living it. Mm-hmm. And so he says, my kingdom is not of this world. What happens to my body? Well, the Father has determined my body is going to be crucified. So be it. I submit myself to that. Callum, please stop. Callum. I submit myself to that reality, right? Because there's also the reality that he's going to put me on a throne, right? And so I just have to go through this. So I'm not upset with what's about to happen to me, right? And Pilate says to him, so you are a king. You say, and so what was your question?
Why was Pilate, like, hesitant to, like, crucify him?
So he's acting very differently than anyone he's ever acted, anyone's ever acted around him, right? And at this point, his wife may have already told him, look, I had a dream about this man, he's a prophet. So he's getting signs. The veil's like slightly lifted for him, right? He's like, something is very different about this man. Mm-hmm. And he's not acting, my wife had this dream, he's not acting like any man that's ever stood before me before. So he says to him, so you are a king? And Jesus answers, you say that I am a king. For this purpose I was born, and for this purpose I have come into the world, to bear witness to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth listens to my voice. So he's not begging for his life, saying, I'm a king, so don't kill me. Mm-hmm. He's saying, I'm a king, and this decision is above your head. You are just mm-hmm. the person carrying out my Father's will. Mm-hmm. You understand? Jesus is in charge of this situation. Pilate's used to always being in charge, unless he gets called before Caesar. Mm-hmm. Right? And so he finds himself in a very peculiar situation where he has some level of understanding. He understands authority. Mm-hmm. And he has a real understanding in this circumstance. This man has an authority which I don't understand. Mm-hmm. You see that? He's sensing there's spiritual truth, spiritual powers here that I'm in the presence of, but I don't understand. And so Jesus is talking about truth. So Pilate says to him, what is truth? Mm-hmm. You know, I don't even know what you're talking about, right? And so then he wins. He goes out. And he says, "I find no guilt in him. This man, like, I don't understand what he's saying, but I'm a little bit intimidated by this man. And why would I kill him? There's not even any reason." So then, you know, he sends him away. He comes back, and then Pilate says, do you not know that I have the authority to release you and the authority to crucify you? And Jesus answered him, you would have no authority over me at all unless it had been given you from above. Therefore, he who delivered me over to you has a greater sin. He says, you only have authority. Hold on. Okay, I have quite a sneezing what would you call that? Ritual? Problem. I had a sneeze coming on, and so I'm craning my head to look at the sun up because that'll make me sneeze every time. I'm now being roundly mocked.
It does work, huh?
Okay, so he says, therefore, he who delivered you has a greater sin. Why would the Jews have a greater sin than Pilate?
Because God expected more out of them?
Yeah, Ananias, Caiaphas, they're supposed to be the ones that hold the truth of Moses, which points mm-hmm. to him. Mm-hmm. And instead of acknowledging that and helping the people to understand this truth, they're saying, no, we don't want our power to be disturbed. So they're handing him over. Pilate doesn't know about these things. To anywhere. I mean, he's going to be vaguely aware of some stuff because he lives in the region. But he looks at that as like not being real, right? And so Jesus says, you have no authority over me. I'm not stuck in the realm that you're stuck in. I live in a higher realm. And I live by rules that are higher than yours. And if the Father wanted me to live, even though my situation seems precarious, I would live. You would let me go, or people would break me out, or angels would do the trick, or I would walk through walls and escape like he had before. Mm-hmm. But the Father wants me to be crucified, so I'll be crucified. Mm-hmm. This really has nothing to do with you. You're just the person. Mm-hmm. Do you understand how different that is than most people standing before the man who can decide whether he lives or dies? Most mm-hmm. men are going to be terrified, mm-hmm. begging. But mm-hmm. Jesus knows my life is in the Father's hands. I'm not going to be afraid of what you do, because what you do is simply a reflection of what the Father wants to happen. Mm-hmm. You see that? That's what we saw in 2 Corinthians, focusing on the unseen, not the seen. Mm-hmm. Okay, Jesus is living it. We're called to live in this way too. Mm-hmm. You know, the details of our life will certainly be different than Jesus's, But the idea of the life that we enter into, Jesus is showing us what that looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Verse 15, they cried out, "Away with him! Away with him! Crucify him!" Pilate said to them, "Shall I crucify your king?" The chief priests answered, "We have no king but Caesar." You know, it just came to mind to me, in the time of the judges, when we're transitioning to King Saul, God is warning them through Samson, like, I want to be your king. Don't choose to have a king like all the countries around you. I want to be your king.
Mm-hmm.
And they said, no, we want a king. Here, there's Pilate saying, look, here's your king. And they say, we don't have any king but Caesar.
Mm-hmm.
What happened to God being the king, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't know. I think that was all I had. Let me see. Okay, that's all I have for today. You have anything?
No. God bless you.
God bless you.